I'm not a preacher, but this is my sermon today. But hopefully, what I'm going to present to you will be a blessing to you. We talk about religious liberty, and you know, there are all sorts of different ways you could do
it. Is it presentation mode already?
Preach religious liberty in many different ways. Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. But the approach that I'm taking here is try to give you a good understanding of what religious liberty is, particularly as we as Adventists look at religious liberty. Because people look at religious liberty in many, many different ways. Depending on who you talk to, what religion you talk to, they'll tell you what they think religious liberty is all about. So the subject for this morning is understanding religious liberty. What is it all about? Before I go up and answer, you have a little bit more. Of all the freedoms that we enjoy in the United States, particularly as they are outlined in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, it is the freedom of religious liberty that comes first and foremost. It is the freedom upon which all liberties are built. Any of us with any discernment or understanding know that there are things going on all around us that threaten all of our freedoms, including our religious liberty. You can see them all around us. Things that particularly we as Adventists should have a clear grasp of because of our eschatological understanding of Christ. This is not our subject of discussion today, but we should be constantly in tune with the biblical prophetic signs so that when persecution bursts upon the scene, we will not be caught unawares. Because we know things are happening and things are coming. So we should not be caught unawares when those things are coming. So in our message today, we will touch on the following areas. Definition of what religious liberty is. Religious liberty, as it is guaranteed by our Constitution. Biblical basis for religious liberty. And religious liberty, as it relates to us as Seventh-day Adventists, and our historical connection to it. So, what is the definition of religious liberty? It is the right of an individual to choose a religion or no religion without interference from government or from others. It is the freedom from coercion in religious matters. It is a freedom limited only at the point of infringement on or violation of the rights of others. So, yes, we have religious freedom, but if we use that religious freedom to infringe on the rights of others, then it becomes a problem. So what does religious liberty include? It includes the freedom to adopt or choose the religion of one's choice. Freedom to change religious beliefs. And you know, in some countries, you can't do that at the risk of persecution or death. Freedom to worship, practice, and observe and feel, which witness one's religion individually or in community with fellow believers. This is called evangelizing. So we have that freedom in the United States. We evangelize others. We can witness to them. let them know what we believe, and if they're inclined, you know, they will still accept. And again, it's all subject to the equivalent rights of others. Now, the Declaration of Independence says, which is written in 1776, states, "We hold these truths to be self-evident or obvious, that all men are created equally. We are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are our life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness." It also says that Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting free exercise thereof. And basically, as a country, we don't have the right, to establish a church that all of us should attend. Or we don't have the right to influence a church. Or we should not be favoring other religious, one religion over the other. Okay. And then, of course, we all have the free exercise of right. Now, the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights, this is just a sort of unification, ratified in 1791, further confirms our religious freedom rights. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging, which means diminishing, the freedom of speech or the press or the people to peaceably assemble and petition the government for redress or grievances. So, there is a system in place that if your rights are a problem, if someone violates your rights, you have that freedom then to petition for redress. Religious liberty is a simple yet complex issue. Simple in that each of us has the right to practice the religion of our choice without interference from the government or powers. However, in its application, it can be more complex than it appears. It is simple as long as your religion does not infringe on someone else's rights or violate any laws. In other words, when your religious practice causes you to adversely impact a person or a group or business, it can affect your religious liberty rights. So let's examine this a little bit further as it relates to a person's religious rights in the workplace. You might have heard these terms, raising such as reasonable accommodation. They're talking about the workplace. Unnecessary burden, adverse impact. They play a part in how your religious freedoms apply. For example, as I said, the Adventist Christian, you may ask for your employee for a reasonable accommodation to have your Sabbath off. If he considers your request reasonable and that it does not create unnecessary burden or have an adverse impact on his business, he may grant or accommodate your request. So you see here, your employer has some influence on whether you exercise a religion freely. Now, federal law requires employers to accommodate the religious beliefs of workers unless it would be imposed an undue hardship on business. A standard the Supreme Court interpreted 46 years ago to mean anything more than a de minimis cost. Meaning if the cost is minimal, if it's more than the minimum cost to you as an employee, then you can make a decision perhaps not to do that right. Congress amended the Civil Rights Act of 1964 to clarify that employers had an affirmative duty to reasonably accommodate the faith practices of their workers short of a new harsh. However, over the ensuing years, the Supreme Court was reluctant to approve any special treatment for religion and awkwardly tried to reconcile the statute with the principle of religious freedom. That here, government here should be neutral in all these things. In place of the plain language of the statute, we said the company had to prove an undue hardship in order to justify denying religious accommodation. The Supreme Court decided on a standard that was far less than it. That until recently. And recently what we have, in May of 2023, a man by the name of Devon Wright, and you all might have heard of him, okay, it's literally that news. He filed a brief before the U.S. Supreme Court claiming that the USPS, or which is the United States Post Office, violated his religious liberty rights by refusing him the right to have his status. Wright, who worked for the United States Postal Service many years previous to 2015, had been able to take his Sundays off without any objection. In 2015, that all changed. Due to economic circumstances, USPS was forced to partner with Amazon to help deliver. You notice there that Rob is called his Sunday, the Sabbath. And so, by the way, you know, this case, by the way, was adjudicated, or at least the lawyers in this case with lawyers from our church, particularly the Pacific Coast here with Alan. Yes. And he was one of the main lawyers. This now required that Sundays became part of the mail delivery schedule. Now, Amazon partnered with the post office. The post office was only able to do it in the mail efficiently. They partnered with Amazon. The post office went to Groff and asked him to work on Sundays, which he refused. Because prior to this time, there was no Sunday delivery. But when Amazon partnered with the post office, they began Sunday delivery. Mm-hmm. So the post office now said to Groff, we need you to work on Sundays. So Groff refused to do that. This stalemate went on for a number of years, and in 2019, the United States Postal Service gave Groff an ultimatum. They said, look, you work on Sundays, or we're going to let you go. And so, Groff resigned. Shortly thereafter, filed a lawsuit against the United States Postal Service. The Postal Service's management argued that Groff's refusal to work created an adverse impact on the U.S. Postal Service, imposing significant costs of other operations, and alleging that his absences created a tense atmosphere and bred resentment toward management, and that the need to find substitutes for time is. So you see those statements I mentioned earlier, having an adverse impact, okay, and so on. They were using some very hard to avoid giving him his Sundays or Sabbaths off as he came. So you see that the very arguments put forth by the U.S. Postal Service are the things that we discussed earlier. So the post office management misrepresented an unreasonable accommodation, caused an unnecessary burden, and created an adverse impact on their employee population. They claimed that the rest of the employees were upset because they were trying to give him the day off, and therefore they refused. Now, two lower federal courts agreed with the U.S. Post Office, and a panel of judges from the United States Third Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that the employer is not required to accommodate at all costs. Yeah, two courts sided with the U.S. Postal Service. And now, because of this ruling, Drive appealed to the United States Supreme Court. Well, that ruling came down from the U.S. Supreme Court on Thursday, June 29, 2023, in favor of Drive, saying that an individual should not have to live in fear of losing his job because of his religious beliefs.
Amen.
It is important to note that God is well with all this called Sunday, the Sabbath. Okay? And while calling Sunday the Sabbath may be a normal thing for those who keep Sundays, now we as Seventh-day Adventists know that it's part of Satan's grand scheme to bring worship to himself. We also know that the issue of forced Sunday worship will be the primary issue of concern for God's people, for God's true Sabbath-keeping people in these last days. We know, we all know that. Okay. In fact, there are forces hard at work today trying to bring this about, and that's that. Again, 2025. I don't know how much you know about Project 2025, but that's embedded right in the hard track. We can see 900 pages. Now, what are some of the obstacles practicing your religion? It is possible that some of your closely held religious rituals are considered a violation. I'm giving an example here, and it's a little bit unusual. So in 1990, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the First Amendment does not protect Indian practitioners who use peyote in their religious ceremony. Now, this is something the Indians have been using forever, right? And the Supreme Court came along and said, you can't do that. While we may all agree that peyote is an illegal substance, it's the principle of religious freedom we're concerned about. It's possible that you may have to change the way you practice your religion because you don't believe in same-sex marriage. And given the militancy taking place today and pending legislation in Congress, that could become a reality in the not-too-far distant future. Or in the case of Hobby Lobby Corporation, the government requires that your company provide after contraception drugs, which are called upon patients, to your employees. But as a Christian company, you don't believe in abortion. And now, you say, well, what does that have to do with free exercise of religion? All right? And in this case, it's not the free exercise of religion by an individual. It's the free exercise of religion by a company. You all may have to remember that case a few years ago where the administration said, look, you have to design of one patient. It's a pill, a medication. And they say, no, they took it to the court. They say you're violating our religion. And as a consequence, the court ruled on it. And, the Supreme Court did rule that it didn't actually give the court of patients So, however, this complex society in which we live, religious freedom may be interpreted differently by different people or groups. So, Seventh-day Adventist, it may mean one thing, or Catholic, it may mean something else. And to an evangelical Christian, another thing, and of course, a Muslim, yet something else. So here we see that religious liberty doesn't mean the same thing to all people. For some, the Adventist religious freedom is most advantageous when separation of church and state is the rule of the land. Given our understanding of the end time events, this is utmost importance to us as SSBA Christians. The Catholics and the Evangelicals, the union of church and state is important in how they view religious liberty. As a consequence, they're able to influence the state to their own advantage. So now if you're combining with the state as a religious entity, okay, then you have influence on how the state make decisions. Okay. So that's why it's favorable to certain groups of people. So on May 3rd, 2018, President Trump signed an executive order 13831 into law, which allows religious organizations to compete for federal funds. Business entities to be used in any way they desire. Example, evangelizing purpose, which was previously prohibited. We see a further erosion of the concept of separation of church and state.
Yeah, okay. Let's go.
In which the state empowers certain religious entities and their desire to gain religious effect.
So,
these groups, because the Joseph and other groups wanted this particular law passed so that they could move the money to their own person, particularly to evangelize. In many recent court rulings, the highest court of the land, the Supreme Court of the United States, has made rulings that should minimize the importance of the establishment clause and accentuating the importance of the free exercise clause, thereby eroding the concept of church and state. And these things are further evidence, prophetic signs of our post-today. Now, here's some comments from Illinois. In the Illinois and Great Conference says this, framers of the Constitution recognize the eternal principle that man's relationship with God is above human legislation, and that the rights of conscience are inalienable, which means it cannot be taken away or given away. In other words, religious liberty is a God-given right. Now, for Seventh-day Adventists, religious liberty has a biblical, historical, and theological foundation. It also has an important eschatological dimension. The first article on this topic was written by J. N. Andrews in 1851. He understood the importance of religious freedom in the context of end-time events. I see, and this is a view that no others has. Okay? It's unique to us as Adventists in terms of end time or eschatological events. No equivalence. The interest of Seventh-day Adventists in religious freedom probably has no equivalence in the Christian world. Again, we're the only one that are going down this road. It has to do with our eschatological vision in our reading of history. And of course, our theological, our theology, and also with our experience. As a religious minority facing the challenges and trying to live out our own beliefs, which among them resting on the Sabbath. Because of these, Adventists are more open to those who declare to persecution and discrimination. One of the things you'll find with our religious liberty groups, whether it's from the General Conference or American Religious Conferences, is that we're open to helping all religious discrimination, whether it's Adventist or not, because of the principle of religious freedom. And you'll find many of our lawyers in the church who will, you know, help other organizations and other people in this meeting. You've just seen that in that situation with Rob. Now, Seventh-day Adventist views on religious freedom goes back to the 1850s. And it was promoted by men such as Hiram Edson, R.F. Cathrall, and the aforementioned Jane Andrews and others. Many of us are aware of A.T. Jones's arguments for the U.S. Congress in December of 1888 and of January of 1893 against the Sunday law legislation. And I'm sure, you know, in the Adventist, we're familiar with that Sunday law was being proposed back then. He argued that in the things which pertain to our duty to God, with the individual's right of serving God as one conscience dictates, society has nothing to do. But it's basically saying what, you know, the way you worship God has nothing to do, society has nothing to do with that. That's nothing. And no control over. Joseph also used the argument cited in Matthew 22:21. Render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Of course, he applied his particular text in Mark and Luke as well. He drew references from the Revelation 13, when early Christianity was being persecuted by Rome, only to have the two then unite into church and state persecution, persecuting power. And you remember that the Roman, making Rome persecuting the church. And then eventually, as the church and state united, and particularly beginning with 538, when the papacy began its 12-year period, that church and state united, and that's where the papal persecution power came. Ellen White warned that faithful followers of Christ would one day again be called before the councils to give reason for the faith. She wrote, "Can we not assist in lifting the standard and in calling to the front those who have a regard for their religious rights and privileges? God calls upon us to awake. We know the end is near. We know the promises are fast fulfilling. We show that we are living in the close of world's history." Even back then, it seems like a long time ago. But Ellen White's words are truer than ever today, isn't it? The Seventh-day Adventist Church's view on religious freedom is biblically based, recognizing that the Christian's duty is not only to his God and to his church, but also to his government, under which he lives and holds cities. So, you know, we recognize the authority of the state in certain things, but we also believe that God. Basically, Seventh-day Adventist position is the separation of church and state, we mentioned that earlier, which is held to be of the best report. Biblical evidence such that Matthew 22:21, where Jesus said, "Render unto Caesar the things of Caesar's, and God things of God's." Exodus 3:1-3, where God says, "You shall have no other gods before me. Acts 5:29, in which Peter and the apostle say, we ought to obey God rather than men.
Amen.
And other texts, you know, you can find in Peter, 1 Peter 3:12-17, John 18:16, Romans 3:6, Romans 13:1-8. So those are other texts that will bolster what you're saying here. Now, Ellen White said that Adventists are entrusted with two special missions: restore truth, primarily through the preaching of the three ages messages, and to promote religious liberty. Now, the Declaration of Principles on Religious Liberty by the Seventh-day Adventist Church in 1889, it says, we believe in supporting the government and submitting to authority. We deny the right of any civil government to legislate on religious questions.
Mm-hmm.
We believe it is the right and should be the privilege of everyone who worship according to the dictates of his own conscience. So you see, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, even back in its inception and early after that, and shortly after that, it took this position. We also believe that it's our duty to use every lawful and honorable means to prevent religious legislation by the federal civil government, so that we and our fellow citizens may enjoy the inestimable blessings of civil and religious liberty. Our Constitution and the First Amendment speak to these rights. And you see, as I mentioned earlier, A.T. Jones, the Congressional Hall, defending the religious liberty. Now, the General Congress of Seventh-day Adventists established the first Department of Religious Liberty in 1901. And later in 1906, began publishing Liberty Magazine, promoting religious liberty and freedom, which at the time was the only magazine in religious freedom emerged. So you see that we, even in early days, were the leaders in this effort, religious liberty. From that time on to now, the organized religious freedom activities of the Seventh-day Adventist Church has grown into a worldwide organization with a tremendous influence on how religious liberty decisions are driven. So, in today's world, the Adventist Church, through its organization, has great influence in how religious liberty is looked at in the world today. And they're involved in many of the conferences and conventions that go on for religious liberty. So the Department of Public Affairs, which is called PARL, is a department of the General Conference of the Seventh-day Adventist Church and exists for one simple reason: to position the church and its services to a standing of credibility, trust, and relevance in the public and private realm. Among its responsibilities are the promotion of religious liberty for all people, no matter what they believe. And the director is a gentleman by the name of Benon Diao. In North America, which is the division we're in, that is at the organization called NARLA, North American Division of Religious Liberty Association, and it supports the North American Division of Seventh-day Adventists. And the director there is Melissa. And then here in our union, the Church State Council is the primary religious advocacy arm of the Pacific Union Conference, to which we belong. It provides practical services to those dealing with religious discrimination, particularly with Sabbath observing, and offers information on educational resources to keep the public informed about issues related to religious students. And that's Alan Reinach, who's the director. And Alan was one of the foremost adjudicators in the Lindsey Gross case help him gain that freedom of getting his son dissolved. And then, of course, at the Southeastern Conference, basically use the unions. Now, here's some final thoughts. I pray that this presentation has been a blessing to you and has given you a better understanding of what religious liberty is all about and why it is important to us as Seventh-day Adventists. Especially as we look toward the things that's coming up on us in these last days. There are powerful forces in the world today who are hard at work conditions that will plunge the world into trouble. And while we should not be consumed with this, we should be aware of these things that have happened. It tells us that we are living in a time that our hearts should be right with God, because things are going to come upon us very quickly and we need to be raised. Some of these efforts are obvious.
Where we put
you should not be ignorant of what is coming.
The cupboard where we put desserts.
Give us sufficient information and warnings in scripture.
Desserts.
And explain a prophecy that we should not be caught unawares. So let us prepare our hearts and our minds so that when these things come, we will be victorious. Remember that Jesus will carry us.
Amen.
And you know,